Kilcannon. They don't call it Kilcannon in Donegal. They call
Poundies.
It Poundies, isn't that right?
Poundies.
Yeah, there's a wee bit about it here. The boiled potato came to produce a variety of satisfying, starchy, creamed potato dishes recognised by a series of old names like Champ, Kilcannon and Pandy. Champ, a food favoured by the fairies, was really the mother of the other two. And like many other potato dishes, its popularity and prevalence is evident in the host of the colourful regional names applied to the dish. Names such as Poundies, Thump, Bruisey. Strange as they may seem, all refer to the pounding or thumping process applied to the preparation. Once boiled, the crumbly balls of floury potatoes were pounded to a paste using a special wooden or iron pounder called a beetle. Very often in country homes, large potholes could be seen dug into the mud floor where the big iron pot was placed to steady it for the pounding or mashing process. This hard work was made easier by the liberal addition of fresh milk or cream or butter. The dish was then finished off with some sharp flavouring, usually scallions or young nettle tops, but leeks, onions, peas and chives were also welcome. And this is very interesting here, the Kilcannon, which is a variety of poundy. The familiar tradition that newborn babies are found in the cabbage patch is well established in Ireland, but the cabbage in Ireland is even more superstitious and interesting features. One tradition is observed at Halloween, when young girls blindfold themselves, head out into the cabbage patch and lift a cabbage of their choice. They then examine the nature of the root of the cabbage plant and its characteristics, long, short, hairy, dirty and so on, and these qualities are taken as portents of their future husbands. The same cabbage is taken in and boiled up to be combined with potatoes to offer the traditional dish of Kilcannon, which in turn used to continue the process of foretelling. A ring is concealed in a large bowl of Kilcannon, which is placed in the centre of the gathered assembly, who, armed with spoons, consume it feverishly in an effort to procure the ring. Whoever does so will be next to marry. An allied tradition involves young girls placing the first and last spoons of Kilcannon into one of their stockings, which they then hang on the back of the door. The first man through the door is taken to be the future husband. Presumably had to divorce a few to get there. But anyway, just there's a recipe here for it, but it does say, large floury potatoes, golden wonders, our cars, pinks are the best.
There's one piece of potato bread they call fudge.
Fudge.
Boiled cabbage and bacon was a delicacy.
It
was used a lot in the West Island.
I came to Mullinhead when I was about, with my grandmother, about 6 years old, and we stayed up in our brack. She had a room there, and she had me down the pier quite often at chopping off the barnacles, you know, down at Portmore, and with a stone, and she took those up then, and she would wash them well, and then she would boil them, and then she'd take them all out of their shells, and then she would put them in milk and thicken them with corn flour, flour.
Cook them.
And you got that with potatoes. That was your dinner.
You would all know Crawford the fruit man.
Aye.
Before he was the fruit man, he was Crawford the hen man. He was from up by Kerrigan's. And Jimmy Crawford used to cycle around the country, spotting out a load of hens. And he landed up at this house out in Desert Agony one day. And the woman was just after cupping a big three-legged pot of spuds onto an old wicker basket out in the street to let them drain.
That's right.
Jimmy come up and he was telling me the story himself now. Man, he says, there was this basket of big laughing spuds, he says. And I was standing about and I called, "Are you about, missus?" No answer. He says, "I reached for a pity and I peeled it." And he ate it and he says, "I think it was in the third or fourth when she come round the corner of the house." So he says, "Tell her who it was," he says, "and that I was looking for it. Had she any old hens for sale?" So he says, "We spotted out a wee of hens and I told her I'd be back with a wee lorry to lift them next week." So that was all right. He says, "I went back, lifted my hens and I paid her." And he says, "It was maybe 2 years later when I was round the same part of the country again buying hens," he says, "and went up onto this house, knocked at the door, I know, and the woman come out." He says, "Do you know me?" She looked at me for a while. Oh, Christ, I, she says, you the man at the hen's pretties.
Long ago in Ireland, the meat was very rare, and families in the country areas sometimes only got meat, maybe Christmas, Easter, maybe another time. And in this case, it was Easter, and the ham boiling away in a big pot, and another big pot of spuds, and everybody's looking forward to it. The whole family were ready to get tucked in, and suddenly three tailors appeared. Now, when tailors arrive in a district, you had to put them up and feed them. So the three tailors arrived in, they smelt the meat, and they thought they were they'd landed in heaven, you know. And they sat down with their knife and fork waiting, and the wife called the husband and said, you have to get rid of them. He says, how am I going to do that? You'll have to get them out of the house. It's the only time we've got meat. He says, they're going to eat everything. And so the man, he thought, scratched his head, and there was the little baby. And in those days, babies used to wear long, sort of swaddling clothes, yeah. You see. So he went over... The tailors are still waiting on the ham and spuds and butter, and the man of the house started to dandle the baby, throwing it up in the air, and then he went over to the pot and he turned his back and he took a spud out and he shoved the spud up the baby's clothes, and he right over to the pot of ham and he went diddly daddly diddly da plop. He says, oh dear. I'm awfully sorry, it's going to be spuds and butter for you.
The dinners would have been reasonably varied even during the winter. A staple dish would have been dried fish with turnips, potatoes, accompanied by copious amounts of milk. There was salted fish, salt hen it would have been, sold in the shops, which went under the name of stockfish, usually salted ling, or as they called it, even dry fish. However, most houses would have prepared the fish for the winter by salting their own freshly caught fish from the previous autumn.
Now, this was done regularly by plenty of people who had caught their fish, and if the fish were small, they put them on whole. If they were larger, they filleted the fresh fish, lay in a base of rock salt and a herring barrel, followed by a layer of fish, followed by a second layer of salt. This continued until the barrel was almost full. The barrel then was covered by a Joanna bag, and in those days, believe it or not, that was... board fertilizer bag. This was a Hessian bag which had arrived in the farm, containing one of the first artificial manures to come on the market, which was essentially bird manure, still available in your local co-op for $4.99 for 50 litres. After 10 days, the very salty fish was removed from the barrel, and a small number, depending on size, would be tied together by their tails and hung from rafters in the barn, or in some locations they would be put onto the thatch to dry. When dried, the fish were as hard as a rock, extremely salty, and would last for ages. In order to cook this fish, it took 2 days steeping or soaking them in fresh water prior to them being restored to a semblance of what they were like when first caught. Another dish would have been salted bacon accompanied with turnips, or indeed for that occasion, or in the case of necessity, a hen or a duck. Or at Christmas, a goose would be killed, plucked, cooked and delivered to the table in a much fresher condition than today, but it had been running around the farmyard the previous day. During the big snow, the main daily work would have been tending to the animals, hens, geese, ducks, and also keeping a weather eye out for any faults in the roofs of the buildings. Another chore would have been keeping any water drains clear.
Now, the evening meal would have consisted of porridge or a boiled egg, which ensured that the person's digestive system had a good long time to absorb the food. No sleepless nights or ulcers then. But then came another piece of artwork, the preparation of the lamp for lighting. As I said earlier, there had been a 45-gallon drum of paraffin oil from which sufficient, like a pint or that, would have been taken and poured into a bowl-shaped container at the base of the lamp. In the meantime, the housewife would have washed and polished the glow, this being an extremely fragile hollow glass enclosure that kept the flame of the lamp working properly, and not an item to be entrusted into the rough embraces of the man of the house. However, this would have never been an unlikely scenario, anyway, as it would have been regarded as woman's work in the first instance.
It's a tilly lamp, and people have to realise what it was. Oil, pressurised, going up a shank about the width of a pen, and it was the spray that was burning, you know, it was the vaporiser, this was the vaporiser. The first thing you had to do was you had a little wick. It was steeped in methylated spirits. purpose of that was to heat the head. Below the head was the mantle, small, thin silk fabric. And then you had the vaporizer. And then you had a little adjuster that you could cut off the air and give it a spark.
Charles McGlinsey was born in Inishowen in 1861. And his account of his life is actually a mirror of his grandfather's time. So you're talking about a description maybe going back to the 1700s in this case. This is what he had to say, which actually ties in perfectly with what JP and Tony have been talking about. Up to my young days, everything the people ate was produced at home. After the corn was threshed, every house got a malder of meal, that's a measure, that lasted them for a year. In the morning, for their breakfast, people took oaten bracken, porridge, and milk, and maybe oaten bread and milk. The oaten scones were hardened on an iron in front of the fire, and there's nothing as tasty with a layer of butter on it as oaten bread. At dinner time, they took potatoes with salt and buttermilk, or maybe they would have herring or a bit of fish or a rabbit for what they call kitchen. Anything outside the staple diet was called kitchen. They used to call pepper and salt dab at the stool for fun. Fish was a thing people went in greatly for. In the evening, the people took oaten bread and milk again, and then a pot of bracken was made for the supper. For the supper too, they used sowens made from the dust of oaten meal. When it was boiled, it froze like carrageen moss and was very nourishing. People went to the strand too at the time of a roart the moor or the spring tide and gathered a cruasa, a load of shore food of all kinds that made good kitchen, dulsk, edible seaweed, schlig or shellfish and carrageen. As well as oaten bread, they made flour bread too on the griddle. They made boxty bread by grating down raw potatoes and mixing them with flour. Boxty is a thing I didn't see made for the supper. People too had eggs and butter and hens and ducks and geese and kept pigs, so they were never short, but nearly all the eggs and butter were kept for sale.
So here we are, the housework's completed, everyone has been fed three solid meals, the fire is stoked up and the lamp is lit. It didn't matter then what the weather threw down, as everyone was happily ensconded in his or her warm bubble. Being the big snow, not too many people would have ventured out. But in normal times, the Kildares would have been gone to arrive, to be greeted with a hearty welcome. There was good talk, good songs and stories, and maybe even a dance over the tongs or broom.
And then, of course, like a cross barman, just before bedtime, the woman of the house would reach for the rosary beads, thus starting a attempt by most men to make themselves scarce, but to no avail, the woman regarding herself as the saviour of the heathen men's souls.
The rosary itself passed over quickly enough, in spite of the attempts of some blackguard trying to make everyone laugh and to set the woman in the warpath. It was only after the stated number of prayers were said that the trouble would sometimes erupt. That the stated number of prayers, that would have been the five dickets and the Hail Holy Queen and the litany and that. And this was when the woman of the house then would start to say what was called the trimmings. That would have been three Our Fathers and three Hail Marys for Uncle John in America or Aunt Jane in Luton. And followed by more calls of the same for the weather, the cattle, and that the cow would calf safe. For the neighbours and the relief of Russia, for the poor black heathens and the priests and nuns and the foreign missions and any other cause that the woman could think of. But there's always maybe an Our Father and five Hail Marys then said for a special intention. That special intention was usually for the sickly young fellow of the family that he would go on to be a priest or something. And it was some time then that the man of the house would get fed up and rise from his knees and disappear up to the bedroom, muttering some very irreligious words under his breath. The trimmings themselves were longer, a hell of a sight longer than ever the rosary was.
I think that's what put everybody off the rosary.
I would say that.
Because you'd done your best, you see, to get away before somebody would start it. And it was even worse if you happened to be courting a woman. You didn't know what time of the house to arrive at to avoid the rosary. Because you had to appear to be a nice, good Catholic boy to sit there.
Do you have any yarn about the house?
Do you have any yarn about the house? But sure, in the name of God Almighty, then you could land in and sure. Maybe you put notions into the girl's head altogether that you may as well go home.
I thought maybe you'd be a priest or a holy father or something like that. I was just thinking back to the time that you were talking about the red flannel, talking about going courting at that time. God, he says you would have met the red flannel at the knees, you know. Never had a clue what he was chatting about.
Well, now you do, you get on the word. God for... So there you have it. Well, today, and a half inch of snow leaves us totally stranded. Back in 1947, they could have survived for a year without aid. So what price progress?
That's our lot on this occasion. I hope you enjoyed what the guys had to bring to you from Malinhead. And do listen in for the next show, which will be in 4 days' time. And it comes from the cottages in Urismana. Gudishan, Slanagas Banard.
The programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Funding Scheme, a Broadcasting Authority of Ireland initiative.